This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get rewards points delivered too. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
Take care of your property with equipment you can count on. Like the Kubota BX and LO1 series compact tractors. Part of our under 100 horsepower tractor lineup. Rated number one for reliability. And Z-Series mowers and Sidekick utility vehicles. Where durability meets speed. Visit your local Kubota dealer for a demo today. Go to KubotaUSA.com for full disclaimer.
Visit GoKubota.com for a dealer near you.
Put industry leading, difference making, and tomorrow shaping on your to-do list. Explore Deloitte Technology Careers at deloitte.com/tech careers and engineer your future at Deloitte.
And welcome back to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman. Joining me live is Emilio Donnell and Scott Tanfield from Friends of Fulham and the Fofcast. In this episode, it's really a reflection back on the Fulham season so far. We're going to talk about the January transfer window, but we are definitely going to start with the COVID situation with Fulham Football Club. That's where we have to start. And before I go any further, Emilio, welcome back to the show. This should be a very interesting episode. What are your thoughts?
Hi there, Scott. Happy New Year. Happy New Year, Russ. It's a sad situation, isn't it, really, to be honest? We're talking about people's lives here. You know, I'm devastated by the number of people who's obviously can talk specifically about the UK, but how many people have new cases every day? How many people are dying every day? This is a desperate situation. Now it's obviously kicked back into football again. We've seen it creep in the last few weeks now, but I think at the end of the day, this new strain is dangerous. And you can see the number of players who've caught it from all levels, not just Premier League, in the EFL as well. Something needs to happen. Something needs to change here. Someone needs to put their foot down. It's not all about money here. It's not about Premier League making their money in the millions for television rights. These are people's livelihoods and families at stake here. And you know, I'm interested to have a very healthy conversation today with Scott and yourself, because the situation is dire. You know, we've seen Fulham for two games to be postponed in, 3-4 days. It's telling you a very, very bad story. This should not be. We should not sniff at the fact that this COVID is basically killing millions of people around the world. It's this. Let's see let's have a healthy conversation today about this, because it's a subject close to my heart.
Okay, very good. And we will have a lengthy discussion about the COVID situation with Fulham Football Club. Scott, welcome back to the podcast, and I definitely want to talk about this. I've been listening to your podcast, the Fofcast. It's excellent. With Jerry Owen and Mike has actually been on several times. Mike Gregg, welcome back to the show, and I look forward to doing this show with you and Amelia.
Yeah, it's good to be back on, Russ. It's been a while. I think everyone's been busy, and as Amelia said, you know, this whole COVID thing has put a lot of strains on people over Christmas, New Year, you know, especially work, everything else that we've been doing. And then for this to break, you know, sort of today, you know, and we had a kind of an inkling of it, sort of, it was going to happen over this kind of period, just really put a bit of a down on it, to be honest. Where we should be sort of coming on here and talking about positives, we've kind of got to look at it as a negative, really, because it's not, you know, it's not really helped the situation. And I don't feel, you know, we've been in Fulham's situation where they are in the league and the struggles of trying to, you know, sort of keep ourselves in the Premier League, this hasn't helped us at all. It's also put us in, you know, the spotlight, you know, certain players and stuff like that. So it's interesting how this unfolds, and it'll be good to talk about it.
It will be, Scott, and we have a lot to talk about, and we definitely want people who are watching live, feel free to comment, because we're going to talk about, obviously, the COVID situation to start off. We're going to start with talking about the matches being postponed. I'm just going to use some topics that we're going to be talking about. Should the season be paused due to the increased number of cases? That's something that has been brought up. Here are some other things that are, again, hot topic discussions that we should really discuss. Should Fulham and clubs in general be fined for protocol situations like this that, again, that it's been found out that that they've not done the right things here? Should Fulham clubs be docked points? Again, these are all topics that we want to talk about and get your thoughts on, so feel free to share your thoughts. Should all clubs be required to tag their players to keep the COVID situation under control? And here's one that I definitely want everyone's thoughts on. Feel free to comment on this. Do you want Mitro to stay or leave if the allegations are true? We're going to talk about the Mitro situation in just a bit as well. Okay. All right, guys, let's get back to it. Scott, I'm going to start with you. Let's talk about the beginning of this and the two matches that have been postponed. Let's start there. So I want to get your thoughts when you learned, first of all, about when we heard that there were some positive cases and that the Tottenham match was going to be in jeopardy. And then, of course, that was postponed. And then, of course, the Burnley match today was cancelled for tomorrow. We're recording this on Saturday. Your thoughts?
I think at some point with the, you know, the winter sort of coming and everything else, I think we knew that we were going to get some cases of this. I didn't think for a start it would be Fulham. I thought we were looking quite strong within the bubble that we'd had.
Yeah.
And I thought we'd been quite professional about it. And you know, I thought maybe we'd probably get through this period you know, quite safely, but we've been the club this time. As I said, that's not really helped us. I mean, you see, obviously, with the Tottenham game, you know, the leaks that have come out, obviously, of players sort of misbehaving over Christmas and New Year. I mean, to look at it, I mean, Tottenham Spurs have not been innocent through this either.
That's right, Scott. Good point.
If you see their reports, I mean, they have had a couple of players over Christmas that went against obviously rules and regulations and they've been kept away from the squad. And you'll probably find that within a football environment, you know, every club or every player or there's been cases at every club. It's just those ones that have been found out or, you know, mistakenly put stuff on social media that's got them caught early. But I think as time goes on, Russ, there'll probably be a lot more that comes out.
Yeah.
I mean, rightly, you know, health always should come first. Should be suspended. You know, there's always going to be conversation or chat about, you know, players should be playing their under 23s and stuff like that. But there's also a competitive side about the sport.
Right.
Regardless of, you know, whether a few players have misbehaved, it is a minority. I don't think the rest should obviously struggle because of that. You know, if you're going to compete, you should compete at your highest level. And if you've got, say, 8 or 9 players out, which is obviously our situation, not all their fault, maybe infected by other people, then game should be obviously postponed. So, you know, I wasn't surprised with the Tottenham game. I mean, obviously, you know, a lot of fans on social media are kicking off about it, especially Tottenham fans. But
yes, they were.
It's a load of rubbish, really. I mean, at the end of the day, Fulham are in, you know, not the same hotel, but they're in a hotel, you know, ready to play the game.
That's right.
They fight at the same time as what Tottenham were, so not a problem. Same with Burnley, prepared to travel up there, you know, and if anyone wants to blame anyone, blame the Premier League, as I said on social media.
I agree with you, Scott. They waited way too long to make the decision on that.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, the Premier League have cancelled it and they've done it for the safety of everyone else. I mean, it only takes one to infect a whole team and then one for the sake of obviously playing a game or two games. Do they want the rest of the season brought into turmoil because the whole lot becomes infected? And that's the seriousness of it. So I'm not surprised the games have been cancelled. I can probably see this becoming a little bit worse as time goes on as well.
Okay, very good. Over to you, Emilio, your thoughts on this. And Scott brings up a great point because this is something that you and I have talked about off air. Listen, the players, the staff, their people. Mm-hmm. That comes first. Their safety comes first. And as Scott said, if one person has been infected and potentially could infect others, the best thing was to postpone these matches. I thought that even days ago that they should cancel mm-hmm. or postpone the Burnley match because the incubation period was still going on. So this was the right thing to do. Yes, there were positive tests today, but I thought even before that they should postpone the Burnley match because, again, the infection could affect other people. And now at least hopefully they can get this under control. Your thoughts on both matches being postponed?
Yeah, I just think this has been coming, right? This is not a surprise. You know, we've seen that we're entering the winter, traditionally a bad time of the year for catching infections and viruses. The numbers, especially in southeast of England in particular, you know, London, Kent, Essex, have been soaring the last 2 or 3 weeks. This has been inevitable. And then you've got Christmas. And you've got, you know, people deemed to be celebrating behind closed doors or, you know, trying to keep it, you know, sort of mask what they're doing, you know, and over, you know, not following guidelines from the government. It was inevitable. You've got, well, I'm finding that people aren't speaking up enough. You've got the likes of Roy Hodgson, well, you know, made a point in last, I think it was last week or the week before, he made a point that maybe the season should be paused or they should, you know, that there's a risk to his players and to staff and families, etc. So it's, I think the Premier League haven't responded quickly enough. They're only interested in one thing, and I've got no respect for the Premier League. And as you know, I'm sure a lot of people share my thoughts about the Premier League. It's all about one thing. It's about money. They don't care about health and safety. They just want the money. And if they were interested in health and safety, why didn't they cancel the Tottenham game a lot sooner? Burnley game a lot sooner. Why leave it to the last minute? So for me, this has been coming for some time. Okay. Premier League haven't responded quickly enough. They don't care about health and well-being of people, generally speaking, including players. And we need people to start speaking up. You know, this is a problem. The Everton Man City game got postponed on Monday. Same situation. Both clubs wanted to play, but last minute, Premier League decided to cancel the game. They were hoping that would just be a one-off. They didn't want this to start being a trend. But now we're going to start seeing a trend here. EFL teams, teams haven't played this weekend because of new cases, etc. Where's the tolerance levels? What's the minimum number of players that need to be affected before a game gets cancelled? It doesn't feel right. People need to start speaking up. The hierarchy needs to speak up. The club owners need to be speaking up. And maybe the right thing to do is to pause the season until we get control of the situation because it's running out of control, especially here in the southeast of England.
Okay, very good. And that's going to lead us to talk about that. Over to you, Scott. Emilio thinks that potentially they should pause the season. I can see where he's coming on that because the cases are rising. What are your thoughts on this? And there's been talk about it, but what I've been hearing is that, again, it's speculation that they're not going to pause, but that could change. What are your thoughts on this? Do you think that they should?
It's a difficult one because, I mean, talking about it the other day in regards to having a pause, but, I mean, what kind of pause do you have? Because even if you pause it for 2 weeks, is that going to be enough for players to get over, obviously, being tested positive for COVID? And then on the back of that, you're going to get more players tested. But so it's going to be ongoing. It's going to be ongoing. I think the Premier League need to kind of look at this and decide what they're going to do with it, whether they have, rather than a pause, a break, and then they kind of get some type of legislation put in place in regards to what clubs are doing now and what their players are doing to try and maybe resolve the situation. It's a difficult one because if you pause it, it continues to go on. If we have a break, you know, this, and unless players are going to be vaccinated, this whole situation is going to continue.
Yeah.
It's difficult to see a way out of it, Russ, if I'm perfectly honest with you.
Okay.
We can pause, we can break, we can do whatever we want, but as Milo's saying, it's all about money and they're not gonna push for that as you know, as far as I can see. So I mean that's why I'm with it. It's a case of, you know, this is gonna be ongoing all the time. The pandemic is ongoing, unfortunately, and players, staff are gonna be at risk unless, you know, there is some more severe protocols put in place.
Yeah, I just feel that having a short break will allow things to be controlled a little bit better because it's escalating out of control at the moment. You see Fulham, you know, so X amount of players. We don't know officially how many. Man City, we'll see what they end up. I think Pep's saying he's got half a dozen key players that are missing for tomorrow's game against Chelsea. Strictly speaking, that game should also be cancelled. So it's these, you know, and plus you've got people who are supposedly celebrating at New Year's Eve. We're only going to find out in the next few days whether they're going to be testing positive and then they spread that. So unless you actually stop players mixing with one another, and maybe the players need to be controlled more. The employers, i.e. the clubs, need to start taking maybe even more responsibility in managing their own individual players. Otherwise, like, it's just not pointless. It's just going to continue getting out of control. But we're in a very difficult situation. But for me, health and safety comes above anything else. Whether some of the people are saying, yeah, there's four teams are in four competitions. So what? Competition is meaningless if you actually can't play games, or you've got players who are dying, or family members who are dying. So this is a desperate situation.
Right. And Scott, back to you. You know, it's a very good point. I'm glad that we're talking about this, because you're right. Both of you are right. This is about money. It's about money. It's about the Premier League. I'm dealing with it here with our leagues too. It really is about money. But I agree with Emilio that even a 2-week pause, I think potentially could get the thing under control a little bit. Like I said, it is out of control a little bit. So maybe, again, I look at it that it couldn't hurt, but to your point, how much would it help? We don't know, but I don't think it's a terrible idea, Scott, to consider putting it on pause for a few weeks.
No. And I think I maybe come across slightly wrong there when I said that. I was talking more about the sport on a whole.
Yeah.
All pandemics around, you know, until people, you know, players are, you know, mm-hmm. whether this is going to continue to happen. Because we know that football players don't behave themselves. The money controls the game. You know, and in situations like this, it's a case that, you know, they're constantly doing it, and it's, you know,
it's a great point, Scott.
Back in again. They're probably going to do it all over again. But no, I agree. I mean, maybe a pause is good to maybe sort of, like I say, rein it in, have a look, see what the situation is, find out who the players are.
Exactly. Investigate at that point too, Scott.
Yeah. So, I mean, no, I do totally agree with that. You know, and it'll be interesting to see now, as I say, clubs starting to get cases, and with
that's
this,
right.
You know, it spreads very quickly. So even the teams that don't have cases at the moment, it's kind of that situation where it's going to be, it's coming for you. It's going to get you at some point. So, you know, this is probably going to get a little bit worse before it gets better. So maybe, yes, a break is a good thing.
Okay. And that's going to lead me to talk about something that, again, you were just mentioning players, and let's talk about this now, because we're looking for deterrence. And these two topics are not just about foam. It's about the clubs in general. So after, let's say these clubs have been investigated and say we learn that protocols have been broken, Scott, should Fulham or clubs in general be fined?
I think so. And I think more so players should be fined.
Okay.
You know, they're on big money. They've got big responsibilities. You know, some of these players go out and earn in a week what some of us earn in a lifetime. You know, simple fact. Being and you ask them to kind of be professional about the situation, and people say, yes, they're only human, and you know, they want to celebrate Christmas, New Year, same as everyone else. But we all know that sport, you know, does operate over the Christmas periods, you know, the New Year periods, and it's a winter period with colds and everything else around. You know, and you ask them to be professional, and if they don't like the game, does then you expect them to be fined for their actions? And I think you're probably going to find that it will happen. Not saying that the people involved with this, you know, are the ones that are kind of responsible for spreading it. But they put themselves in situations where they've made everyone else vulnerable, the club, staff and everyone else around, families, et cetera, et cetera. So, I think there probably is going to be a few fines going in the direction as this grows. So.
Okay. Emilio, your thoughts. And I'm glad that Scott brought this up, because we can look at the clubs, because it stops at the clubs, you know, but these are employees of the club. So shouldn't the players themselves be fined as well? Again, this is if they broke protocol. Mm. What are your thoughts on what Scott just shared there?
Yeah, absolutely. As a minimum, if players are deemed to have broken protocols or not followed guidelines, then absolutely they should be fined X amount of weeks' wages. I mean, that goes without saying. I think the Premier League have to probably review the thing. Scott made a point about reviewing the situation, because this current strain of COVID is more aggressive than the original one. So are the current protocols fit for purpose? Should they be reviewed? Should there be more frequent testing than there has been up until now? Same with the EFL. I read earlier today, the EFL now are introducing more frequent testing during the week. So obviously this, you have to look at the current situation. The current situation is more sinister than it was 2-3 months ago in the first strain. So my view is review the protocols, make them more tighter where possible, and then enforce the clubs to comply with those principles. If the clubs are deemed not to comply or not to be harsh enough and strict enough, then fine the clubs as well. I think at the end of the day, players have an individual responsibility, like me or you do. We know we've got to take responsibility.
The players have an individual responsibility.
We wouldn't have so many cases and so many people dying, but people not treating this with the respect it needs. So same thing with the clubs. If the clubs are deemed not to comply, then I think they should be fined as well. Why not? They owe a responsibility to our society and to the nation and to the world.
Okay. Let's take it one step further. And again, this would be extreme, I believe, but what are your thoughts about this? Should former clubs possibly be docked points if, again, the protocols were broken? This, to me, I'm going to say it right now, I think this would be a step too far, but this would be a deterrent. I'm going to share a comment on that because we actually have a comment of someone actually mentioning this as well. So I'm just going to share this. This is from my friend Chris. Games should be forfeit if protocols are breached. That will stop player breaches. Melio, your thoughts. Again, this to me, I think this is too far, but what are your thoughts?
It's linked. I think there needs to be some very clear guidelines around what constitutes a game that can be cancelled or not. So is it two plays? Is it four plays? Is it six plays? You know, there's no strict policy around. So be more rigorous, Premier League and the FA, saying if you've got X amount of players who are in breach or who've got the COVID and are positive, then the game can be cancelled. But then I think on the flip side, if there's been evidence that a club has breached control protocols, whether it's a player or a club not following the procedures, then I think we have to be harsh. Somebody's going to get fined and penalised very soon. That's going to set a precedent. It might be Fulham, it might be another club, but the only way to tackle this issue and for people to take more responsibility is to be probably more aggressive in terms of penalties here. So it wouldn't surprise me that the Premier League may start setting a precedent and saying, look, any more than two games that are cancelled, you're going to get points docked or you forfeit the match.
Forfeit, okay.
I think it was Rotherham United in the EFL. I think they played the other night because they were scared of the consequences of not playing that night. So I think the two previous games were cancelled, and if they were trying to interpret the rules, and their interpretation was if they went the third game being cancelled, they would either be points or fine, with money that they don't have. So I think they end up playing with skeleton staff.
Okay.
So be very clear on what the requirements are, the protocols are. Review those protocols and put them in place so clubs can easily interpret them. If they don't comply, then someone's going to, how do you say, be the guinea pig, as they say, and will pay the price for it.
Okay. Scott, what are your thoughts on this? Again, very interesting to put this on the table. Docking points, forfeiting matches. What are your thoughts on all this?
It's a difficult one, Russ, because you can't deem everyone the same as one idiot that's gone out and contracted because of rules. And say, for instance, you've got a team, say 10 other players that, have stuck to the protocol, want to play, and they've unfortunately been affected by this one individual. But at the same time, I suppose clubs do have a responsibility to, maintain the whole of their player base and the protocols that they should abide by. So I think it's a bit harsh to say should teams be docked, et cetera, but I think it is looking at on a case-by-case basis to find out how, an outbreak started, how many players were, the centre of the situation.
Right.
And irrespectively, I think, punishment should be handed out based on those guidelines.
Okay.
I agree. There is a case that if you get past a certain amount, say we've cancelled our game against Spurs and then Burnley, and then the following game, you're into three games, and then it is looking a little bit kind of situation, really, because then obviously you're breaking the mould of the Premier League and everything else that goes with it. So personally, I think they need to look at it. Just docking straight away, I think, is a bit severe, but they need to look at it on a case-on-case basis and find out, obviously, why the club has got that situation. And if it is based around, obviously, the club itself not being tight on protocol and maintaining players, then maybe go for something like a docking situation where they say you failed to put three games because you've not kept your house in order, dock your 3 points.
Okay. And I understand where you're going on that. It should be case by case. But again, it's really about, like I said, needs to be investigated. And if they're not following the protocol, there needs to be some kind of deterrent. I know we're going to the extreme deterrent, but I think it's fair for us to talk. And we're not just talking about Fulham. I want everyone to understand that's watching and listening to this. This is about all clubs in general, but since it's dealing with Fulham right now, we are obviously talking about Fulham. Okay, guys, let's move on. Let's talk about a very controversial subject. And again, we probably have all seen the article from the Sun from Tom Barclay, and it involves Mitro and pictures of being at a, I guess you could say, a New Year Eve gathering with a Crystal Palace player, captain. I don't want to try to pronounce his last name because I can't do it. So if this turns out to be true, and again, it, you know, all the reports are that it's going to be investigated by Crystal Palace and Fulham. I'll go to you first, Amelia. What do you thought about this? Because I went on social media, I saw a lot of people talking about Mitro. Do you want Mitro to stay or leave if the allegations are true? What are your thoughts? Again, this could be a controversial topic. What are your thoughts about this?
Again, when it's all about health and safety, you know, at the end of the day, I don't want players playing for the club who are irresponsible, disrespectful, and don't give a toss. I'm going to just use that word rather than another word I'm going to use about people around them. There's guidelines to follow. And again, it's all speculation at the moment. I think Mitrovic's wife or his partner, she put some pictures up or videos up on Instagram, then took them down. So I assume there is some truth there behind it. But equally, you know, the Crystal Palace captain, if supposedly he was hosting a party, hosting the event, or they were together, why the hell was he playing today for Crystal Palace and captaining the team? I just don't get it. So yeah. For me, at the end of the day, whether you love a player or not, there's rules to respect. There's ethics here, at heart, and he's totally disrespected that. So again, it's all speculation at the moment. Let's see what comes out of the wash. But if it's true,
let's call it what it is.
It is true, and it is official. Then minimum he should get fined, and then similarly, you know, at the end of the day, you know, the club should sell him. I don't want him anywhere near the club. You're putting your own players, staff, family members at risk for the sake of having a private event, a party on New Year's Eve. But let's see, it's all speculation, but whether it's Kearney, whether it's Areola, I don't care who it is, whether it was Ryan Sessegnon 2 years ago, you put aside the fact whether you love a player or not. At the end of the day, it's you've put lives at risk here, and I don't care. You know, that one that nowhere near the club.
Okay. Over to you, Scott. Again, this is controversial, but you know what? I think it's a valid topic here to talk about Mitro based on the speculation that's out there. Again, everyone can see it. But this is going with the idea that if the allegations are true, what are your thoughts on it? And then also your thoughts on the fact that the Crystal Palace captain played today, which, again, flies in the face of everything we're talking about today, basically.
As Amelia says, I mean, at this moment in time, it's all speculation. The media, especially the Sun, do like to make up a story that it could have been sort of pictures pulled from party that happened, you know, sort of March of last year, and, you know, they've kind of wangled this around it, but we don't know. I mean,
okay,
the reality is that it has happened. We won't really know for sure, but again, it's an irresponsible act by a player that's supposed to be acting professionally over that period of time, and, you know, you take them regardless of what their calibre is at the club to act responsibly. I mean, for me, it's one of those ones where, I mean, Mitro's been such a good player for us, you know, whether it's been in the Championship, whether we brought him in, he's a loved player by...
Yes, he is.
He's an icon. Mm. I think someone even said the other day that, you know, bar sort of Saha, he's been one of our better strikers, yeah, you know, since Gordon Davis and everything else. And he's kind of one up there that's, you know, really put a positive spin over, you know, sort of promotions from the Championship, you know, sticking with us, being loyal and stuff like that. And, you know, this comes out and it kind of just puts all of that into jeopardy. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, from the George Best years or whatever, players in that area were up to it as well. And, you know, you just didn't have the media kind of speculation that there is today. And unfortunately, you can't move within this industry without the media being hot on you. So, you know, if your wife's going to put, you know, your life story on Instagram or anything like that, then obviously, you know, you've got to be sort of managing that part of your career as well. You know, it's kind of like you just can't be that irresponsible. It's a difficult one for me because I've got a lot of kind of, well, I had a lot of respect for Mitrovic. He's a very good player and still is.
He's very loyal to Fulham. Say that.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think, you know, this just doesn't help him in a very sticky situation because obviously this season he's been a bit part player for us. There's obviously something not quite right there. You know, he's not been firing all cylinders this season. And then obviously this is put on top of him as well, which makes it a lot more difficult for people to kind of accept because I think they feel at the moment that he's not putting in 100%. His lack of respect for Fulham's kind of slowly dwindling. Mm-hmm. You know, is this kind of a time where Mitrovic parts company with the club. And for me personally, this has not helped his cause at all. So,
okay, very good. I'm going to just share some comments. This is from my friend Chris. I just want to share if Drew Mitro should be, very least, be fined by the club. He was irresponsible. And I'll just share a couple more. This is from Ben Lawrence. Keep him at club. It was nothing terrible. I'm not even going to try to pronounce this name. Is in his support bubble. I'll just leave it at that. The Crystal Palace captain.
I agree with that. Nothing terrible. Ben, it's people's lives at stake here. It is terrible. I disagree with you completely. At the end of the day, why is he in his support bubble? Then I disagree with that entirely. That goes against the grain. It's irresponsible people like that that's resulted in COVID cases increasing thousands fold in this country. And I'm not talking about other countries. I'm talking specifically about the UK. So if we have people like that multiplied by all the other players, then the world would end. So I totally disagree with that point. But sorry, Ben.
Okay, very good. All right, guys, very good stuff on all of this. One last topic as we're talking about the whole COVID situation that I want to go back and talk about is this. Let's talk about this. And Emilio, I'll go back to you. Should Fulham be making a statement like Spurs condemning these actions? Your thoughts on that?
Obviously, Spurs and West Ham, they've obviously come out. I think it was West Ham as well. Then they had one of their players who they've gone out on record and basically made a statement of fact. Whilst it's still speculation, I don't think Fulham or Crystal Palace will say anything for now. I think the fact that the Crystal Palace captain played this afternoon either suggests they know more than the Sun newspaper and that it wasn't fact, possibly. Alternatively, it's still under investigation. But if it's deemed to still be under investigation and not clarified or confirmed, and the captain of Crystal Palace played today, that's worrying as well. And the same thing here. So I think there needs to be a holding statement here that either the club should say, look, we understand there's speculation, et cetera, et cetera, and an investigation is currently in place. I think they owe that statement, not to the fans, but again, from their well-being perspective. I think this goes beyond the actual reputation of the club. This is health and safety. This is people's lives we're talking about.
Yep, very good. And let me stress one more time, because we're talking about this. This is speculation with Alexander Mitrovic. It's speculation, okay? Let's just stress that. We're talking about if, for some reason, this turns out to be true. And as Scott said, the source of this is the Sun. So let's keep that in mind as well. There are a lot of different factors. But again, it's something that I don't want to not talk about. I don't think we should avoid talking about Mitro because it's out there. So I thought we have to talk about it. Over to you, Scott, your thoughts on this. Should Fulham be making a statement like Spurs condemning these actions?
I think we probably will, but knowing our communications part of Fulham, it'll probably come out about 7 weeks too late. That's all we normally like with most communication. But no, I think Gamido's right in regards to, I think they'll investigate first. I mean, like any football club, like Crystal Palace today, it's business as usual. And if I was told that both players, even though they broke protocol, were tested and come back negative, then obviously they are in a situation where they can play today. So
right,
that'll be a reason why the Crystal Palace player has turned out today. Business as normal, he's going to play. He's one of their better players and they're going to throw him straight in. But I think Fulham now, with the Burnley game obviously postponed, and from what we know, there are a lot of cases at the club at the moment. I think they're going to need to look at that. And I think what Fulham will probably do is they'll probably come out with a statement in whole, I would have thought, just on the whole situation.
Okay.
And I think that will follow. I think they have to, because obviously if you're going to postpone games for a certain reason, and like we are at the moment, I think it's hell for Fulham on the social media platform at the moment. Every sort of support of every club wants to be relegated, dot points and all sorts. So we're going to have to come back with some kind of statement. And I think that will be soon.
Okay, very good. And I want to share this. This is from our friend of the show, Trevor. And this is the point. I can't believe people are talking about getting rid of Mitro. And Trevor, the reason why we're talking about it is because, again, if you go on social media, you're going to see it. You're going to see the talk. So I think it's a valid point to talk about. Again, this is all speculation with Mitro. There are no facts yet. It's just speculation. But I think it's fair for us to talk about it and not avoid the subject matter. Okay, very good. Great stuff. And again, we're going to have to see how this all plays out. And I just want to just say this before we wrap up this topic of talking about COVID-19 and the cases with Fulham. I just wish a speedy recovery for all the players and staff. And let's just hope there are no more positive cases. That's all I'm looking for. And because safety and health of everyone comes first. Okay. All right, guys, let's move on. And let's now talk about the season so far for football, because I definitely want your views on it. And, Scott, I'm going to start with you. We're going to spend a good amount of time talking about this. This is the second part of the show, and the third part is going to be talking about the transfer window. So give me your overall assessment of Fulham's season, and I'm going to ask it. Give me a rating for the – it's not even halfway through, but we're beyond January. Give me a rating and your thoughts on the season.
I mean, when we – coming back to the 2019 season, I kind of had – fears that we would come up and kind of replicate that. So my initial kind of thought pattern on the season was, Christ, we're going to have to go through this again. It's going to be the season. You know, with the first four games and, you know, the
it was horrible.
Through the door quick enough, you know, I got that horrible feeling again where football wasn't going to be enjoyable this season.
Yeah.
You know, but you can't blame, obviously, Parker, who's, you know, he kind of got us up. Obviously from the season before, you know, a bit of a rookie manager, as we call him, you know, inexperienced himself, you know, needed to be backed early or given the best tools to do the job. And as we know, the Premier League is very, very unforgiving. You haven't got four games to get your arses in the gear. As you see, you lose your first four or five games, you could end up getting relegated. Mm-hmm. Leeds have proved that with the kind of good start that they had. They've now given themselves kind of a buffer within the season, whereas we're still effectively trying to find our feet, and we're only just finding a style that's working for us. But for me, again, it's kind of just probably a little bit too late, because we're probably two or three wins behind where we should be, really. And to make up that ground is very difficult, as we know. I mean, season on the whole, Russ, I mean, don't get me wrong, I mean, even where we're in the position that we are at the moment, we've improved considerably. You know, especially from a defensive point of view, I think the goalkeeper's fantastic. We brought in, you know, left and right back. We've kind of got, we've really shored it up there, but it is a case that we're not firing on all cylinders up front. You know, and this comes back to the Mitrovic kind of conversation, which I'm sure we'll touch on in the transfer bit. Whereas,
absolutely.
You know, we're playing sort of, you know, Cavalero up front in a kind of a Mitro type role. Who's, what is it now? Is it one goal in 35 that he's got?
Not good.
You know, there's clear problems there, and I can see what he's trying to do. He's trying to make us hard to beat, but at the same time, we can't go playing a system like Leeds do, because we don't have the firepower to go out and maybe start winning games 2-3-0 before we've even thought about it. And we can't do that. So I understand what Parker is trying to do, but we're just a little bit too short, obviously, in those areas. And obviously, we'll come on to that in the next part of the show. But if I was to rate it, I mean, at the beginning, I would have said a sort of, you know, a 3 out of 10 again. I thought, here we go. It's going to be, we haven't learned any lessons. But signings have been better. I think managerial kind of approach to this season has been a lot better.
Yes.
He's trying to get some sort of identity. He's made us hard to beat. We are one of the dirtiest sides in the Premier League at this moment. Whether that's that's a statistic you don't want, but that shows you that he's toughened us up. We desperately need, I think, a kind of a very good window this January with two or three astute signings that can push us on to maybe achieve we need to achieve by staying in the division. So overall, look, it's a 5 out of 10 at the moment.
Okay, very good. Emilio, your thoughts, and give it a rating too for Fulham season so far. I thought Scott did a very good job of going back to the beginning, talking about the way the season began, which was really horrible, and how now we have an identity. But the question is it too late? And we'll touch on that on the third section. We talk about the window, because I think that's going to be vital, and I know you agree with me on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think it's too late, to be honest. I think it's are we in the position we expected to be at the beginning of the season? Yes, I am. You know, I'm not surprised to see us in the bottom three, but in a relegation dogfight. I think we all knew that before the season. I think I remember coming onto the show straight after the Brentford victory at Wembley. I keep saying this. I was worried about, you know, how we'd cope in the Premier League. So I'm not surprised to see us in fighting for relegation. But I've been pleasantly surprised after that dire first 3 or 4 games that we've actually a very difficult team to beat. You know, I think we've proven it. We've won the best defensive record in the last 6 to 8 weeks. And that's, you know, who would have thought that? You know, again, we had Tim Ream, Michael Hector in defence. Now we've got a very strong back four, back five, very strong, very good goalkeeper. So the foundations are there. we, you know, at the end of the day, it's, you know, Scott Parker's trying to create this identity, as Scott said, and it's working. The opposing team are, you know, struggling to beat us. We've seen that. The four consecutive draws. You know, the problem is obviously we're lack of goals. We knew that beginning of the season as well. This is no surprise that we're lacking goals. We said that we've invested the bat in the defence, but you know, we've said it time and time again, even before a ball was kicked. We haven't invested up front before a ball was kicked. And we've seen the price for that now. We're not scoring enough goals. But as far as I'm concerned, we've still got a fighting chance. There's still games that we can win. We need to get some quality up front. We need to start scoring goals. And if we can keep the defence, the goals conceded down to the minimum that we're seeing at the moment, and being a little bit more creative. I think that's what we're still missing. I still think we're not intelligent enough in key places. Our final ball isn't good enough. Our crossing into the box could be better. You know, so we're getting the space. Lookman, Robinson, they're getting out wide, but sometimes their final ball is lacking, to be honest. And I think that's where we've got to be a little bit more intelligent, a little bit more creative. If we get that sorted out in January and a couple strong additions in the team, in particular striker, and potentially a backup central defender as well. We saw Michael Hector came in against Newcastle for 20, 30 minutes. He looked awful, absolutely awful.
Yeah, that was a little worrying watching him back in there.
Worrying.
I disagree with you on that.
So I'm just even thinking if once this COVID situation dies down, one of our central defenders picks up an injury or maybe catches COVID, for example, has to sort of rest for 2 weeks. The match isn't going to be cancelled. The game has to carry on. So I just worry that we haven't got enough adequate central defensive backups. But I'm pleasantly surprised where we are now compared to where we were two, three months ago. So we've given ourselves a fighting chance. I think I'll give ourselves a 5/6 out of 10 rating, to be honest, more than that.
But the key thing is,
the framework is there. The structure is there. We're more difficult to beat. But I think we need more than just a striker. I think, Scott, you said it. Good signings.
I think Scott was alluding to that as well, talking about three players. So
midfield. I know Tom Kearney fans out there, and I love Tom Kearney, but somebody with a bit of intelligence, a good final ball, decent crossing in the ball. We've got the potential there. We're not maximising that, and that's a problem at the moment.
I think one of the situations is as well that when we did come up, obviously through the playoffs and what Parker had to work with us, we've had a team that's been there quite a while. We've relied heavily on the Kearneys, we've relied heavily on the Mitrovic's and like that. And obviously coming into the Premier League, that style, unlike what Leeds have done, where obviously they've just kicked on with a type of style that they've had under Belisa. So we had to change that style because it was never going to work with A, the team that we started off with, B, when you implement these other players that have come along, there was no style. And it's kind of like Parker had to rip up the kind of, sheet and restart.
You need to build the foundation up, Scott.
Yeah. Yeah, and then when you look at it as well with the players that we got up front, Cavalero, Lookman, and then obviously others are coming to the fold. They're not Premier League quality. It's a fact that we are lacking in some areas, so it is a little bit more difficult for him. All right, we could argue the case with Leeds where they got players up, obviously Bamford up front who's scoring goals and bits and pieces, but they're very creative. Like what Emilio was saying, we lack a lot of that. To put balls on a plate for players to score goals. We don't do enough of that, and we do lack that in this division. You need that, not as well as being a tough side to break down.
But defensively, Leeds is not tough to
defensively
at all. I mean, watch them; they're just not.
No, I mean, I don't want to give them any more kind of media sort of loving that they're all it's going to drive me mad. But they have a style where they go at teams and they will try and score goals.
Yes.
And reason for them where they will win a game and lose a game, win a game, lose a game.
That's who they are right now.
They will stay up.
They will stay up. You're right, Scott.
We're trying to draw every game and not penetrate sides. It's not going to keep us up. So that's something that we do need to improve.
That's a good point. That's a very good point by Scott because, it's funny because if you look at Leeds, and I'll be critical of Leeds defensively, but as Scott said, they're going to win a game and then they're going to lose 3-4-0 because that's how they're built. That's how Bielsa has built them. But they will stay in this division because they're going to get the victories.
Yeah.
And like Scott said, Emilio, this is a very good point. Yeah. We have to stop drawing because drawing will only take us so far, and that's going to lead when we talk about January because they need to start turning these draws into victories. But do they have the players to do it? We're talking about offensively.
Yeah, and this is you use that example, 4 games, 2 wins, 6 points, 2 defeats, 0 points, 4 draws, only 4 points. You're actually better off by 2 points by winning 2 and losing 2. But the point is, in those games against Liverpool, look at that game against Liverpool. I thought, Liverpool there for the taking. Again, they rode their luck at times, Liverpool. Yep. And that's very clear. But the same time, we had a bit better quality finishing, that game would have been out of sight for Liverpool. The Newcastle game, I said it before, forget the controversy about the penalty that went against us. We should have been 2-0 up. That would have been a moot point as far as I'm concerned. You know, being 2-0 up and conceding a penalty. So for me, we're not either converting the chances, not creating clear-cut chances. And we're just lacking that bit of finesse, that final ball, that quality ball on the plate, to Sot's point, that striker like Mitrovic can bury in the back of the net. And so at the moment, you've got the Caballeros who are threatening the defences, but no end product. Lookman, not quite the same player he is the last few games. He's, you know, teams are finding him out, to be honest.
The
last four or five games, he's not been as effective at times. He's looking, but he's not getting past that defence of the opposing teams. You know, against Brighton, he was ineffective. Newcastle could have done a bit better a couple of times. So it's players are finding him out. He's getting frustrated. And that's a worry, because up to that point, I think he's probably been our most consistent player this season, and I like him, but he's lacking a bit of quality and a bit of imagination and creativity at times.
Okay, very good. All right. Coming up next, we're going to rate the summer transfer window, and we'll end with talking about the January transfer window, what Fulham need to do.
The economy is crazy right now. All-time high inflation, bearish stock market, rising home prices and interest rates. How do you figure it all out? Make your money go further and work harder with a certified financial planner professional from Facet Wealth. Financial planning used to focus on retirement, but with Facet, a dedicated expert guides you through every financial decision. Facet advisors are certified financial planner professionals and fiduciaries. That's just a fancy way to say they have the best training, and they're legally bound to do what's in your best interest. This isn't just about investments. You get an entire team of experts within insurance, taxes, estate planning, and budgeting to make complex financial decisions easy. Facet has a simple flat fee, no hidden charges, and with nothing to sell, there are no commissions. Visit tryfacetwealth.com for 2 months free off your first year of financial planning. That's tryfacetwealth.com.
Facet Wealth is an SEC-registered investment advisor. This is not an offer to buy or sell securities, nor is it investment, legal, or tax advice.
Okay, guys, let's get right to it. Scott, right back to you. This is, again, a very interesting topic, because there are many ways to rate this, because, again, it's obvious that Fulham have, improved as the season went, and the players have come good. Several have them come good. But honestly, I'll start us off here, because, again, Fulham deserve criticism, a couple things, you know. And, again, I'm glad that they brought in the players. You brought in, talked about those first four matches. Again, it got us behind the eight ball. Part of it was because some of the signings were very late. And that deserves to be thought of when you go through your rating. Then something else that needs to be talked about as well is the, yes, there was good business done, Scott. And I agree with some of the moves. Some of the moves were great business. You're talking about Anthony Robinson and Adebayo. That's great business. But there's been some business that, again, I have thought that Fulham wanted to bring players on permanently and not really, if it was to bring them on loan, Scott, it wasn't supposed to be loan. It was supposed to be loan with an option to buy. Well, we kind of went against that. And again, I'm sorry, Tony, but you actually set yourself up for this, talking to the newspaper about not bringing Ryan Sessegnon back because, again, you don't want to groom someone else's players. I'm paraphrasing. That's part of this for me because, again, Adama Lookman's a great player. He won't be with Fulham next season. So, again, be consistent. You shouldn't have said that in the press, and that's part of this for me. He's a good player, but let's be honest. You brought him in because you knew he would help us, and you kind of went against your philosophy. So I wanted to throw that out there. So again, some great players, I think, have come in, but it's not all positive. Your thoughts, Scott?
I think some of the players that have come in have, you know, been of decent quality. You know, there is the old cliche with us that it's, you know, a little bit too late.
Yes.
And I think it's a lesser of two evils because, you know, we've got a mass inflated squad there where obviously we've come into the Premier League, but then we're very bloated on players. You know, we've made... at the end of the day, we never knew what division we were going to be in.
Right.
You know, it's a lottery. You know, so if you'd lost that game against Brentford, you have to remain obviously in the Championship, and then if you kind of, you know, obtain the service of say Caballero, Bobby Reed and obviously Knockhart, you probably be quite happy the way things have gone because you've obtained and kept players of a certain quality. But that wasn't the case. We've gone up. You know, we've handed sort of extended contracts to people like Cabano and stuff like that. So we've kind of bloated the squad out as far as we go. And then when you look at the outskirts of it, we've still got players hanging around the club like Siri. You know, he's not even
in
the main squad. He's probably sitting on a good salary. We've got the other goalkeeper sitting on the bench. Can't remember his name now. Someone help me out here quick. The goalkeeper that we brought in 2019.
Fabry.
He's still at the club, and it's kind of ironic that you have three goalkeepers sitting on the bench. You know, it's very unlikely that two get injured. You know, and it is and I think the problem that we've made ourselves is that we've come up. You know, people have looked at number one, obviously the nightmare that we had last time, and our agent players thinking about Christ, am I really going to sign for Fulham this season, knowing what's going on down there? We've got a situation of obviously bringing in quality where you know we've got a bloated squad, we can't get rid of some of these fringe players, and we don't have, you know, the movement there, and you know our wages are kind of too high, and there's not spaces within the squad, so we've kind of made it difficult on ourselves, really. And I think that's why obviously Tony's had to go and look at things like loan players and stuff like that, because it's simply not a case of going out spending that money to entice players.
I think it was to balance, because we actually had a bloated squad. Because we had all these players that, again,
I think
that are not part of the team. Well, they're part of the team, but they can't play because they're not part of.
Well, I think it's a bit of both for us. I mean, in the day, if you went out and sort of said to an agent, you know, come and sign for Fulham or whatever, blah, 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 they're going to kind of look at that in two ways, aren't they? You know, well, probably favourites for relegation, be, you know, the catastrophe that happened in 2019. Do I really want to put my player there, or do I kind of take a risk somewhere else? And I think that's been the case as that summer window's gone on. It's been a little bit sort of lagged, obviously, because of obviously COVID and everything else. Issues getting players in. And the only way that we can fill those voids is to go out and get loans of players that are kind of not really doing that well at their parent clubs that have got a bit of quality, and you bring them in on loan. And it's also a risk factor, isn't it? I mean, if they go back to their clubs, you're not going to keep players there that are on ridiculous wages. So I think it's been a bit of a balancing act. Cost of how we put this team together. But on a whole, I think the quality has been a lot better, but we still in quality. We still lacked in certain areas. And again, it's taken us far too long to obviously get it together.
I agree with that, Scott. And I want to say this again. I think a lot of the players that they brought in, I have to give Tony credit. Absolutely have to give him credit. But I think it's also fair to criticize the lateness of the center backs and the fact that he let Alfie Mawson go out on loan and not have a replacement. That, to me, again, was a mistake, and I'm going to say that right now. But if you look at it now, I think Fulham do have quality. But as Scott just brought up, they needed some more quality that they did not get in the window that will lead us to January. So, Scott, before I go to Emilio, just give me a rating overall for the window.
40% out of 100, I'd say.
Okay. Yeah, Emilio, how about you?
I'm a little bit more positive, to be honest. I think, you know, I agree with Scott, the fact that we had to play our final early August, so we only had 7 weeks to make it, you know, actually start
to
go and make
it. To be fair, that's a fact.
Big crap. But we knew defensively we weren't strong enough, and I think I'm going to give the owners credit for actually going out and getting the right players. Look, the result of that, you don't get better overnight. It's progressive. We've seen over the last months we have been more difficult to beat. We've now gone through a very good spell where the teams are struggling to score against us. So overall, we've now got the right framework there. Tet, unfortunately, picked up an injury early on, so he's still to come back. And Aina hasn't disgraced himself in deputising for him. You know, some of the players, like Loftus-Cheeks, maybe, for example, I was very excited when he joined, but maybe he's not quite the player we expected. You know, he hasn't really controlled many of the games. He's in and out of the team. You know, something's not quite right there. Maybe he's still not 100% fit. But, you know, I expect him, a big player, former England international, to come in and make a difference. But he hasn't quite done that. But overall, I think, you know, the foundations are there. And the fact that we're now more difficult to beat and we've got an opportunity to still stay up, I think it's easier to start attracting a better quality of player in January this month than we would have done back in August, September, when we were odds-on favourites to get relegated with that team that got promoted.
I agree with you on that.
I think the way Scott Parker's, whether you love him or not, he's starting to create his identity. We're making ourselves more difficult to beat. The framework is there. And I think it's easier to start attracting a better quality type player who will believe in joining the club and fighting for the club to stay up in this division. And look what Villa have done. Villa stayed up with a scruff of their neck last season. They've pushed on and now they're a very, very good team. They're very exciting to watch, dare I say it. So for me, I'm going to give the transfer winner 6 out of 10. I don't think it's too bad. He sorted out the defence. That's a key thing. But we also many of us did say that we needed more quality up front and a bit more quality in midfield creativity, and we haven't quite got that. That's what we need to reinforce. If we get that, then there's enough games there to stay up in this division.
See, I agree with that, Emilio. And I think, and again, going back to the window, I would give it a 5 because, again, I think some mistakes were made. I'm talking about the lateness of some of the moves, especially at center back. But when I look at some of the players that are brought in, they've, like I said, I love Anthony Robinson. I think Kenny Tete is going to be a very good player for Fulham. And, Adam Ola-Luckman, see, the issue I have with Adam Ola-Luckman, and, I will put Areola in that, and then, of course, Anderson. What's interesting is that these are players that are on loan with no options to buy, and I think you can look at them differently. Like, I think Areola is playing for Fulham, and I think that Adam Ola-Luckman is playing for Fulham, and then, of course, Anderson is. But, the fact that there's no option to buy has always rubbed me the wrong way. That's why I just wanted to bring that up. It's just I would rather have these players with an option, but we don't. But I do think that these players are given their all for Fulham, but it's just a little criticism that I just don't like that. If there's an option to buy, I feel very differently about these loan deals. But I do like overall what they've done. But to the bottom point, we're going to talk now about the January transfer window. Scott and you, Amelia, both have brought this up. They left themselves open to not getting someone to help us up front, and now they need to do that. So let's transfer and finish the show by talking about that. So, Scott, over to you. Let's talk about the January transfer window. And I'm going to do this in a fun way. Tony Khan, what is your plan for the January transfer window? And then I'll get Emilio's plan. You're Tony.
Well, I'm Tony. what's your plan for the January transfer window? I mean, it's like anything else. I mean, it's a striker, isn't it? That's where we're short. I don't know, and I've actually completely forgot about Rubus Ostensik until he's been that poor this season. I completely forgot about him. I don't know whether he was brought in with that kind of attribute to give us a little bit more firepower up front, and that's kind of backfired with us. Maybe
that could be a factor, Scott. Maybe they thought he was going to be that player,
but he's not. Obviously, he's not turned out to be the player that we thought he would be. And again, it's like you touched on there, Russ, we're carrying a player that's on loan. I think it's a lot of things with a player like that. He's come back from a serious injury. And, it's like where he's probably slightly cautious, not match fit. And he's probably got one eye still on Chelsea because that's his parent club and he probably doesn't want to get injured before. There's lots of factors. But then obviously if you bring a player in knowing that, then obviously you're probably going to get that on the pitch, aren't you? So we kind of lack there. But for me, I mean, January's got to be about a striker and it's not got to be about any striker. It's got to be one that can come in and obviously fit to the system that Parker's playing. Like we touched on before with Mitrovic, it's a very strange situation with him because we're opting to play, as I say, Cavalero in a position where he scored one goal in 35, that being a penalty. And we're leaving out, a striker that 9 times out of 10 will get you a goal if you deliver it on a plate. And even in the poor side, Mitrovic will get you 10 goals a season. So there's something clearly not right there, either A, in the way that system we're playing is just not fitting in, or number two, Parker doesn't fancy him, and maybe this is kind of the end for Mitrovic. We don't know. But without any other options, I find it kind of slightly strange that we're still not playing him. And if that is the case, then for me, a striker has to be your number one target and it has to be somebody that's already been identified and somebody that comes in that can hit the ground running and we know can get goals because that's what we lack. Right. So if I am Tony Khan, that's what I would have been doing, you know, even before this January transfer window come about.
Okay. And right back to you, Scott, what do you do with a bloated squad?
I mean, you've got to try and thin it out as much as possible. I mean, there's got to be players there that obviously are not happy with not playing. I mean, you've got the players that are outside of the squad, but we know the reasons for that. Injuries that weren't going to come back in time. Players are just simply, you know, our championship players, and we try to squeeze in all ones that we don't want. I think you've got to try and get some out on loan. You know, you've got to look at players like Lamarche and your Cabanos and stuff like that that are not really going to have, you know, a good look in this season. We've got to try and get some of them out.
Right. I think we definitely need to.
Yeah, if you don't, then we're going to struggle getting players in. I mean, we don't really need Fabbri on the bench. I mean, just bring Wickens through as a third goalkeeper. As I said, it's very unlikely that you're going to get a couple of injuries at once. And I think we've got to be a little bit sort of shrewd as well. We've kind of shift some players, but we've got to bring in a handful of quality that's going to be enough there to obviously improve us moving forward and allow us to score goals.
Well, I'll give you the example, Scott, and then I'll go to Emilio because I want to get his thoughts. Go back to the transfer window when they brought in Mitro and they brought in Target. Again, these players made the difference for Fulham getting promoted. Let's call what it is. They need impact players like that. And getting back to the squad, you know, you got players like Seri that, again, you just need to get rid of, you know, because you need to make room for two or three players that are coming in. You need to get rid of some of these players. Emilio, your thoughts. What would you do if you're Tony?
I think we have to be brave here, to be honest. And that's the key thing, you know, and buy these big players. You know, when we got Ryan Babel a couple of years ago, everyone was like, turn their nose up. You know, the fact that we got a player, a former Premier League player, you know, not been around for many years in the Premier League. And suddenly, you know, he was our best player for those 4 months, if you remember, a couple of seasons ago. But I think we need big players. We need players who can play in this division. The problem is we've got as well is how many corners are we getting? How many free kicks we got? We haven't got a good dead ball, you know, player. You know, corners have been very poor, to be honest. We need someone like Shaqiri. I know we're probably not going to be able to afford him, but he's the sort of player that we need. Very good dead ball specialist, good passer, very creative, very intelligent. Someone like him, whether Liverpool will release it, whether Fulham have got the money to afford to pay for him. That's the sort of player that we need to be targeting. Okay. Go get Troy Deeney from Watford. He's the sort of player who's strong, got goals, scores, getting assists. He can score penalties. He's not everyone's favourite cup of tea, but he's proven his division. He's scored at this division. I know he's how old is he now? Early 30s, but you know, his record is self-explanatory. He's clearly won his division and invites other players, gets a lot of penalties and assists. Those are sort of big players that we need who have played in this division, know how to adjust. We haven't got time to get a foreign player who takes 2 or 3 months to adjust to the Premier League at the pace of the Premier League, 2 games a week. And with COVID situation, we might have to end up playing 3 games in a week at this rate and catch up. So you need players who know this division, the challenges, the pressures, the pace. That's what I mean. The likes of a Shaqiri type of player with the quality at dead ball situation and can score goals. Okay. And someone like Troy Deeney who can assist and score goals himself. Those are the type of players that we need.
Okay. And I've heard this suggested. And actually, I heard this on the Fulmer show too. Ask Klopp to loan or Ricci for the season. I would do that. But is he the type, Scott, is he the type of striker that Scott Parker wants, though?
Does he get enough goals?
No, I'm not inspired by him.
I mean, a lot of people look at stats and stuff like that, but he's not done enough for me, you know, in the time that he's been at Liverpool to prove that he can come in and fulfil a role like that. And I mean, it's a role that he would come in and probably still be a lesser of a player for us. I mean, like Emilio's saying, this is a position where we need somebody to come in that's had experience, that's known how to do it, and gets goals.
Would you consider a Deeney at this point?
Probably. I mean, I know what he's like. He's not my favourite player. No. Can't stand his attitude, to be honest. But if he gets you goals and he roughs up defences a little bit more than what Cavaliero and Bobby Reid does, then I would probably sort of bring him in because he's another player that can also bring other players into the game. You can probably free Lookman up a little bit more with the way that he bullies people.
He's intelligent.
So again, I just think, I mean, and touch more what Milo said as well, we've got issues as well with bringing players in from abroad because of COVID reasons, we don't have time to mess around with things like visas and stuff like that. This is a difficult window. And like I say, we've got to be looking at like something like a Shaqiri, that you said before, something like that, that we know that can score goals, got a bit of pace, you know, is good on free kicks and stuff like that. And that's what we need to be looking at. Whether that's been identified, I don't know. But it certainly is going to be an interesting January transfer window, and I don't really want to see it going on right to the end, to be honest.
It's formed, Scott. You know it's going to go to the end.
And this is what worries me, Russ. I don't want it done on the 28th or the 29th.
I agree with you. Get it done now. I totally agree with you, Scott.
This is a little bit different for me, and it's a bit irresponsible, I think, based on obviously Premier League survival, to leave it that late. And knowing that we need that position, I would have thought that plans, negotiations, and probably talks would have been put in a little bit earlier this time around.
And bear in mind as well, sorry to interrupt there,
go ahead.
The COVID situation, what we talked about earlier, how many more games can we end up getting approval to cancel or postpone, for example? So it may come a point, I know we've got the FA Cup against QPR next weekend, but beyond that, we've got crunch games against Brighton and West Brom, games we have to be
Those matches are coming up very quickly that are going to be very important, and that's a good point. And
we need to have players in place for that game, not players, to Scott's point, have to get visas, have to sign all these foreign contracts, get players who are in the country.
I agree with that.
Troy Deeney, Shaqiri, they're both in the country, played at this level for many seasons.
Would you consider Sturridge?
No.
Okay.
I'd rather keep what we've got.
It is prime, maybe, but not now.
No, not now. Too injury prone.
Okay. All right, guys. To finish this up, and we are running a little bit long, but we've had a very good discussion here. Let's just talk about this, and then we'll finish up. Scott, to you. Will Fulham's rest of the season be dictated by what they do in January? I would say yes.
Oh, 100%. I think this is what most of our shows bang on about. I know, obviously, we over-fantasize sometimes about transfer windows and about who we bring in and who we sell, and it's a bit like football manager, et cetera. But I think this time around, it's a little bit different because I think, obviously, from the poor start that we've had, and obviously with everything else goes with survival and stuff like that, we've kind of turned it around a little bit, and we've at least given ourselves a little bit of hope. We've noticed that, fans have noticed that, and I think management have noticed that. And I think it's key that as a club now, we identify players well in this window. We get the business done early and we push on. Like Camilo was saying, we've got the foundations now. If we can get somebody who can start putting goals away, we start beating Brighton 1-0. We start beating Newcastle 2-1. We start beating Liverpool 2-1. And before you know it, we're sort of 9 points more than what we had, and things start to look a little bit brighter. I know it's all hearsay, but that is the cold truth, really. Improve this situation now. This window is very, very important.
I totally agree, Scott. And again, you just have to go back to when we got promoted, when we were at the playoff final with bringing Mitro in and the difference he made. And Emilio, that's why I agree with Scott on this. It's vital. It's what they do now could be the difference between survival and going down.
Yeah, and there's enough games there to pick up points. It's going to go down to the wire. Let's be honest. It's not going to be good for the heart for the next 3 or 4 months. But Sheffield United look dead and buried. West Brom, struggling like we are. They're conceding and not scoring. Brighton, a bit like us, struggling to score and not losing many games. So for me, I think the third place would be between Brighton and Fulham. Burnley, I think I've always said Burnley, their fortress is Turf Moor. They continue to start getting wins, 1-0 wins here and there. They're picking up wins where we're only picking up draws, and they've pushed on a little bit from where they are. So to be honest, unless we start to quickly win games and get ourselves out of the bottom three, then it's going to be really between us and Brighton, I think. I don't think Sam will say West Brom.
Newcastle might be drawn into this. I think Newcastle might come down.
I'd like to see them get down. You know how much I hate Newcastle, but I think they've got enough points in the tank. I think they've got 19 points. They've got Callum Wilson again. That's the sort of player that we need. We resisted the temptation by Callum Wilson in the summer.
Yep.
That's the sort of player that we need.
It's that early start as well. Like Leeds, they've had a good start. Yeah. They put the ball, and it's very difficult to see. Now, when you look at us, when we're on sort of 11 points and then you look up and they're sort of on the 18, 19, 20s or whatever, they're sort of half the way there.
Mm.
We haven't been able to go yet. And it's kind of like you look at the team and think, I know that they're poor, but how are we going to pull these teams in?
Right.
I think we need to concentrate on ourselves for once. We need to get the business done in January. We just need to start beating teams, and the rest will take care of itself.
Right. But, I agree with that, Scott.
Yeah.
I agree with that. All right, guys, great show. We went a little bit over, and I want to thank both of you for sticking in there because, again, very good to talk to both of you about this. We covered a lot in this hour plus show. Scott, thank you so much for joining Emilio and I on this special episode of Cottage Talk. And again, just tell everyone, you know, I'm sure our listeners and people that watch this have listened to your show, but talk a little bit about the Fofcast that you do with Owen, Jerry, and then our good friend Mike Ray.
Well, I mean, as we all know, I've always sort of appeared on your shows, Russ, and I never really had any intentions of kind of starting a podcast, but I think it was all pressure from members of the forum and stuff like that, just to do something a little bit different, because with the world of social media these days, Twitter, Facebook and everything else, forums are becoming kind of a bit of old hat. They're still there. They're still, you know, they still have a purpose, but they're not your go-to place now for anything. You know, forums are not as busy as they used to be. And I've kind of been subject to kind of everything else, you know, working, being busy and doing what I've done. And the forum has always remained the forum, and I've never really sort of pushed it forward. But it was kind of based on that, really. And as I say, it's not anything that was sort of kind of invented to take off, or it just maybe like one show a week or something, like just to give us a little bit of variety, really. A little bit of Marmite. We want to try and keep it spit and sawdust. It's not everyone's favourite podcast because we like to be quite honest. But it just gives us a bit of variety, really, Russ. So. Yeah.
Absolutely. And Scott, you know, if you don't already know this, I listen to every episode, and you guys, you know, again, you talk about everything and you're honest. And that to me is what I want out of a podcast. You're very honest, and that's a very good thing. And and it's a very enjoyable listen because of the honesty. Emilio, over to you, your thoughts before we go. Yeah. Final thought.
No, it's been a good show. You know, it's, I've enjoyed, you know, seeing, getting Scott back on the show. You know, so like yourself, I listen to Scott's podcast every week. So very good. Yeah. It's entertaining. I think that's a key thing. You want fans to be engaged. You want fans to follow a podcast. You know, you don't always have to agree with people's opinions. Like today, you know, a lot of people raising comments. Some I agree, some I disagree with. But that's democracy, right? So we're all entitled to our opinions. We're all entitled to say our thoughts. But, you know, that, for me, there's room for Scott's podcast. I'd like to see Scott on College Talk a lot more often. So had a good bit of fun. Again, it's a serious show. It's been more of a serious show. Again, let's just, you said it earlier on. People are dying by the thousands globally. Yes. So my best wishes is to everyone who's suffering with COVID, their families, friends, and so forth. And let's all hang in there together, follow guidelines, follow protocol, and we'll beat this bloody virus.
And that's a great way to end the show, Emilio, because this was a serious show, especially to begin with, because it's a very serious topic, and safety first, health first to everyone around the world, wherever you are, just take care of yourself. And we're talking about COVID-19, and I think we needed to talk about it today. And I think we did it about as good as you could possibly do with a serious subject matter like that. All right. Well, it is time to wrap up this show. For Scott Tanfield from the Fofcast and Friends of Fulham and Emilio Dano, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you as always for watching and listening to Cottage Talk.
It's the 90th minute and all to play for at the end of the match. All your mates are around. You've got your McDonald's share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? I know I'm in. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van center to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.